Hey, it's Dr. Howard Gurr for The Shrink Is In. And today I'm talking to Andrew Kolsky, who's a therapist in Virginia and Florida who works with OCD patients and uses virtual reality therapy. So, without wasting more time, let's begin the conversation on The Shrink Is In. Okay, so my guest today is Andrew Kolsky. He's the owner of the Center for Professional Counseling in Florida and Virginia, and he does telemental health in those states. He treats obsessive compulsive disorder, anxiety, trauma, and he's the owner of a company that creates VR platforms for treatment of OCD. So, welcome to The Shrink Is In.
Thank you, Howard. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and your audience today.
Thank you. So my whole approach is to really, I guess, dance around my interest area, which happens to be your interest area as well, which is the use of virtual reality therapy and augmented reality therapy in the treatment of behavioral difficulties and mental health issues. And so I guess my first question is, I know how I got here. How did you wind up in this ecosystem, so to speak?
It's a great question, and we could go on for days talking about it, but I'll give you the short version. So, I started off my professional career as an attorney. But one of the things that I liked about being an attorney was always doing work with juries and understanding how people think, what causes them to make the decisions they make, persuasion, all those types of things. And so I've always had an interest in the brain and thought. And when I realized that the legal profession was not a pleasurable place to be, I switched over into mental health counseling because it was truly the part that I was interested in. So when I got into mental health counseling, me being the ever-present entrepreneur, I never settle for what's there. I always look for what's next and how we can improve what's there. So, short version of the story, I found OCD and related disorders to be something of a lot of interest for me. I really enjoyed working with it. I enjoyed learning about it. And I ran into lots of roadblocks with it because of the opportunities or lack thereof for exposures. So that's what brought me to the VR space that I'm in now.
Good. Yeah, that's it's kind of a similar story. I mean, I obviously wasn't an attorney, but I wanted to find a way to speed up the process of treatment for exposure therapy. So I work primarily with people with anxiety and phobic disorders, and VR was perfect for that. But it wasn't even, anywhere near training that we had. And so it was a matter of having to step out of the box and find a way to kind of train yourself to use that technology. So yeah, I think VR works very well for mental health issues. But I think what interests me is obsessive compulsive disorder is a difficult disorder to treat, and I get my fair share of cases. And so, from my experience, what I use the VR for is mostly for anxiety reduction and kind of connection to mindfulness, and I guess to get around meditation, because I think meditation for me is just too slow. So the VR works very well for that. And then trying to use CBT techniques to reduce cognitive irrational thinking. But I mean, it's a tough road. Have you found any real strong tools and benefits?
So Good question. And like you say, it is, we're in the early days of this when it comes to mental health and all of the technology that we're able to use now. And perhaps it'll help answer the question if I give a little bit of background as to kind of how, you know, what my thinking is in the area. And so, you know, with any sort of OCD or anxiety or anything where you're going to be doing exposure therapy, you know, to me, and I think most people would agree, your best option is if you're able to be with the person in the real place, exposed to the real thing. The reality is that's not always possible, and it's certainly not realistic in terms of a therapist trying to run a practice. You can't leave your office and spend hours driving around town trying to meet clients and spending time with them. And so for me, the way this whole thing got started was I'm doing a lot of telehealth, which personally I find to be really helpful for OCD, because in many cases, the patient can be in the setting where they are having most of their issues. So a lot of people at home may have issues with touching doorknobs when they come home, or touching things in the bathroom or the kitchen. So we can actually have them pick up their computer, go to the kitchen, go to the bathroom sink, and we can do work. But then you have those who have issues that are not so easily replicated. Maybe I've had clients who have issues sitting in a crowded coffee shop. So could I go meet them there and do that? Yes, and I have, but it's not so easy. And what happens when you have a client who has concerns related to airplanes or concerns related to being on a ski lift? Or you can imagine the types of things where you can't just go there, which is actually my company's slogan is go where you can't. Because of what VR offers. And to clarify, when I talk about VR, I'm really talking about extended reality in different ways. And what I mean by that is your traditional VR is going to be mostly a computer-generated scenario of something, maybe sitting on an airplane. And VR is great. I love VR. You can do a lot of stuff with VR, but there's a lot of limitations as well. And the limitations are, number one, to create a computer-generated VR scenario, it's time-consuming, it's expensive, it's difficult. And when you finish creating it, you have one. And if your patient habituates to it, you got nothing else to offer them. The other thing is you need special equipment. You need special VR goggles, which patients in many cases don't have, and they're not willing to shell out $500 or more for the goggles. And even if they did, and you're doing telehealth, you as a therapist, you can't see what they're seeing. You don't know what they're doing. So there's a lot of drawbacks in terms of functionality, in terms of expense, in terms of logistics that is keeping VR from the market, in my opinion. And so as a therapist, you know, I kept running into situations where, you know, if I only had a VR option for this patient, I could do so much more work with them. And what I realized was I don't need computer generated graphics. What I need is scenarios where a person is sitting in a real place. So an airplane, and I have here, this is a 3D camera that I literally live with. Mm-hmm. And so I can go on an airplane myself, take video in 3D, and then use that in my program. And the patient can literally be sitting in the airplane and look all around them and see everything that's in the airplane. They can hear the announcements. So I'm doing a lot of the 360 video, 360 pictures. And then the next piece that you run into is with OCD, there's so many different types of things that people need to be exposed to. You can't possibly have a library that has all of them until recently. Now you can. It's called AI. So I've got AI incorporated into my program as well. Right now, we're at 2D images or slightly moving images. Soon, we'll have 3D images. So if you needed, an image of somebody, sitting on a ski lift and, you know, one ski falling off, whatever it may be, you can literally type that in and AI will generate that for you. And then my technology that I'm building out would allow us to do a video call like you and I are doing right now. Mm-hmm. But then I have an app that goes to the patient's cell phone, and the patient takes that phone and they drop it into a very inexpensive pair of holders, right, goggles. And then the therapist can send the image to the patient. The patient is now immersed into that 360 video, and the therapist is not only seeing the patient sitting there, but the therapist is also seeing the screen that the patient is seeing. So if the patient turns left or turns right or looks up or down, the therapist sees that. So you're able to literally sit there with them in the setting and see what they're seeing and do the work with them as you're talking to them. That's what I've been creating.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I've been using VR in my practice since 2016. Full transparency, I'm an advocate for Amelia, which is another company out of Barcelona. I'm the American ambassador, supposedly, of that company. Mm-hmm. And so they've been doing something very similar, but there is a package of computer generated environments and virtual environments of, you know, like 360 movies and stuff like that. Not as flexible as what you're saying your package and platform can do. So I agree that there's no way that a standardized package program could meet everybody's needs. But what I found over the years is, especially for anxiety and phobias, is that the whole idea is, from my perspective, is to raise somebody's anxiety enough so that you could work with whatever their issue is and retrain them essentially on how to handle the anxiety in a much more effective way and reduce it on their own. So you give them a skill set so that they can do that. But my experience when it comes to more compulsive thinking has been more difficult. In terms of how do you get somebody who has a random and disturbing thought? It's not an action. It's a thought, and the thought may have really nothing to do with anything in their real lives at all. Mm-hmm. But they're stuck with it. And they're now unhappy because they can't seem to get rid of that thought. And that's where I have most of my difficulties with OCD patients. It's getting rid of that random thought that bothers the patient. And it may be, you know, a disturbing thought of some sort. You know, I'm going to kill that person or I'm going to die, whatever, you know, very, very significant. And they can't get away from it. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question would be, how do we work with that particular problem in terms of extended reality?
Sure. And it's a great question. So, let me add one more piece to what I was describing, and then I'll answer that question because it'll make more sense. So the other piece that I am eventually going to be adding in that we're still sort of catching up with technology is the augmented reality, which is you can be wearing a set of goggles with your cell phone in it, and you're literally seeing in front of you. So it's like you're looking at the camera, you're seeing your computer, you're seeing your desk, whatever. And then I, the therapist, can drop in a snake or a spider or whatever right in front of you on your desk. So this is where we're headed. So now let me answer your question. So for OCD and extended reality and the options available, it is one tool in the toolbox. It is not meant to be the tool for everything. So clearly, you have to have a patient who is having obsessive doubt related to something that's triggering that. Now, in many cases, it can be a physical object or a physical setting or something that triggers it, and not in all cases. But, you know, you referenced like harm OCD, for example. A typical harm OCD patient that I have will be, well, I'm afraid to have people over to my house because I'm afraid that I'm going to pick up a knife from the kitchen, or I'm going to pick up a, right, you know, something from my living room and hit them with it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we can set up scenarios where we show the image, the picture of the type of thing that causes them that triggering of the doubt, and use that, you know, to move forward. So just like you said, the whole idea is triggering the distress and getting them into that distress place so that you can do your work. But yeah, there are some cases where the types of thoughts or types of issues are not best handled by VR. And so this is not supposed to be a one-size-fits-all tool. It is a part of the process where when you're doing your exposure hierarchy, for example, part of that hierarchy may be appropriate for VR or extended reality type of things. Part of it may not be. So, you know, the answer is it's using the right tool for the right patient at the right time. And this is just one tool in your toolbox.
Yeah. Now that brings up an interesting point, just the concept of tool, because I have this conversation all the time about insurance and insurance reimbursement issues. And the question always is, well, is that reimbursable? You know, and I would say, well, if you look at VR as a tool, a therapeutic tool, it's not a separate therapeutic entity of any sort. It's just a tool. Then why isn't it reimbursable? And I said, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I've had no problems getting reimbursed from insurance companies that I'm on panels of, even explaining what I'm doing. I had a case many years ago where I wasn't part of an insurance panel, and this person came in, and, you know, in the field, you know that there's something called a single case contract. And so what happens is you have an agreement with the insurance company. I'm not part of you. I'm not on your panel, but I'm willing to take this one patient. So I now have a single case contract. I will abide by your rules and payment schedules for this one patient. And so I had to call up the insurance company and explain what I was doing. And they were like thrilled. You know, oh, that's great. And so, of course, they gave me the contract. But I think in terms of behavioral health, that, you know, when everyone argues or debates whether it should be reimbursed or is it reimbursed, in behavioral health, it makes clear sense that extended reality or, you know, augmented reality, virtual reality should and is appropriate for mental health services. I don't know if you've had any conversations about that with people.
Well, I mean, certainly, yes. I've been very interested in the insurance angle, because if insurance doesn't pay for something, it makes it more of a challenge and it makes for less access to people. And, you know, following what you're saying, it's kind of like if you're a medical doctor and you want to prescribe a different medication, there's no question. Of course, it's covered if it treats the issue. So VR is just a different type of medication, if you will, that we're using for certain types of therapy. So it should be, in my opinion, a no-brainer that it's a tool of the practice.
Right.
But, you know, I don't have the access or the time to the boards of the insurance companies who are, you know, interested in saving money to encourage them to spend money. But in the
long run, it does save money. That's my point. All right. When you look at the issue of working with people with anxiety and OCD and talk about the length of time it takes in traditional therapy to address those issues versus the time it takes to deal with those issues in virtual reality, it's a money saver for insurance companies, as far as I could tell.
It is, but think of it this way. And again, I'm not in the boardroom, so I can't say, so I'm just imagining. But what I imagine is the executives that have to make that decision are getting their bonuses based upon quarterly profits. And if you're looking for a long-term solution that saves money but doesn't save them money in that quarter and they're not going to get their bonus, you can imagine which way they're going to go.
Yeah. I'm not sure it really goes that way. But I think that, you know, as we know, insurance companies are very easy and eager to accept premiums, not so eager to pay out on services. They are keeping track as much as we don't like it. They know how many sessions, you know, we have when you submit to insurance companies. They keep records on productivity of clinicians. It used to be pervasive in the early days. They used to say, well, you know, your average patient, you get a report. Your average patient is running 29 sessions a year. Yeah, okay. You know, but in terms of VR, my experience is that I would, with my population, for the most part, I would say within 10 sessions, I'm pretty much at the point where they're almost conquered whatever their initial problem was. Now, there may be other issues, but when they come in for me, they're coming in for a very specific and localized issue that I have to address.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell people, a third of my practice come from other clinicians who are in the process of their therapy. Patient says, oh, by the way, I have to fly in 6 weeks and I haven't been on a plane in 20 years. And the people in the area, clinicians will, say, well, I can't get to that in 6 weeks, but Dr. Gurkat. So they would send them to me. I would focus my therapy sessions on what I'm looking for. I wouldn't look at other things because I didn't want to step on a therapist's toes. Get them to the point where they can get on the plane and fly comfortably, and then they're back. So it's very specific and short term. Of course, it means I need a high turnover rate, but that's just part of doing business.
Well, it's because of the technology and how rapidly it's changing now, the opportunities are becoming more and more accessible and more plentiful in terms of different types of things that we, probably haven't even thought of yet. But an interesting thing that I run into all the time is that, I run this free support group for OCD, and I get people who come from all over the world. And in so many other countries, there's little to no access to treatment for OCD because mental health care is not, mental health isn't even an issue in many countries. And mental health care is very hard to come by. And then mental health care of someone who understands and knows how to treat OCD is a teeny fraction of what's out there. And then you've got cost issues. So the real long-term picture here, to me anyway, is how can we eventually harness, technology to provide some sort of appropriate benefit to people who have access to nothing versus something. And, the issues related to that, again, we could have, a whole day's conversation of that. But, the goal here is, and I'll be honest with you, I'm one of those practitioners who does not accept insurance. And the reason that I don't accept insurance is because my goal is to focus on treating the patient the way that I believe is best. And I want to be able to have the right number of sessions at the right time doing the right thing the way I see it, not the way the insurance company sees it.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. We can make much quicker progress when we can use the right tools the right way and put them into practice. And, you know, the few experiences I've had with insurance companies, I've made the decision. It's not worth my time. It's just too troublesome.
No, I agree. I was very active. I've been in practice since 1983. Managed care didn't hit the East Coast until about 1990. Before that, it was whatever you wanted. And at the time in 1990, it seemed like a reasonable idea. And at that time, I was also very active politically in the local psychological association. So I saw what was coming. Mm-hmm. And at that time, my wife and I, we had signed on to like 22 different insurance companies. So we had contracts with everybody. And then little by little, either they were collapsing or merging, or we were dropping them. And I'm only down to two. I take Medicare, which I don't know how long I'm going to do that. And I also take one portion of the local United Healthcare plan that only deals with New York State employees. And I did that because I used to work as a school psychologist. And so I had lots of connections with teachers and school districts. And I felt kind of like an obligation to continue that affiliation with them. But I retired 10 years ago, so I don't know how long I'm going to keep that up. But yes, the insurance companies were very, very intrusive and controlling, and I had all sorts of fights with them. They've kind of backed off now. They're less involved in trying to maintain us and control us. But the reimbursement rate is horrific. And so, you know, from insurance purposes, I'm getting paid from those companies exactly what I got paid in 1985.
Wow. I don't know if you've had this experience or not. I have had several situations where, so like I said, I don't accept insurance, but I will provide to my patients a super bill and then they could submit it to their insurance for reimbursement. Right. And so I have had situations where patients have, you know, sort of checked the wrong box where they tell the insurance company to pay me directly.
Yeah.
What happens in those cases is then, and I don't know all the background of this, I'm just sharing my experience with it because this has happened several times. So the patient will submit maybe, you know, five invoices together to the insurance company. And instead of the insurance company paying what their policy is, I get a call from a company that the insurance company contracts with to negotiate my rates.
Yeah, all the time.
And the negotiation, they're offering me to pay me 30% of what their rate is, which is very, very low already. And I don't know the actual numbers, and I'm being a little bit facetious here, but it's like $10 a session. It's like, no, that's not going to cut it. So,
you know, it's interesting. I have in my early years in my podcasting, I used to use the podcast as a way to rail against managed care. And I have one out there that I put up. It was against this company called Beacon, which is the United Healthcare version, the mental health version of United Healthcare. And the reason I did that was I got in the mail a certificate. Now, I haven't had a raise from them for years and years and years, but they gave me a certificate, which is like something you get in elementary school. And I was supposed to be proud that I was given this award by this company. And I went bananas. So I did this podcast, and I spent a lot of time in production on this one. And I said, what was it like to be in that room when this was the decision to provide this little, you know, diploma to clinicians who did well by them? And so I actually did this whole scene. And, you know, basically at one point in the scene, someone says, well, maybe we should give them like a Starbucks gift card. And somebody else says, no, we don't even have to go that far. We don't even have to do that. Let's just give them a certificate. And someone said, that's a great idea. And then it kind of like a dream sequence, and it comes back to me. And I go, and I explain to them, who came up with this? I haven't had a raise from this company in like 20 years at the time. And this is how they pay me back. Okay. The next day, I got a call from the New York State division president of this insurance company saying, very funny, but, you know, we really meant it. And basically the message was, could you take it down? I said, no, it's staying up there. And it's been up there for like, you know, since 2006, I think. Yeah. So and I had another one, the same company where I had a billing issue. It was a billing problem, and I'm a provider for them. And I caught the billing problem like after 120 days, resubmitted the bill, and I got a statement back saying, it's too late, we don't pay you over 120 days. They said, but if you were out of network, we would pay you up to a year. I said, so I'm in network, I get screwed by you, and on top of that, you punish me. So I did another one like that, and I had had my wife sitting there in front of what looked like the hellfire. And that was the office of the company. And she's at one of these little booths talking and telling me, well, that's it. It's too bad. We can't do anything about it. You know. So yeah, managed care had its problems. And but the biggest problem really is that they nickel and dime us. And it annoys me that as a field, and we could talk about this forever, mental health people don't fight for themselves. We don't stand up for ourselves. We look like easy targets, and our patients aren't going to complain. Can you imagine that? You know, that's not happening. So right. it's a whole battle. So I understand why you're not in insurance companies, and I'm only one step behind you. But it becomes a problem in terms of, you know, getting patients, you know, for the most part, because everyone wants to use their insurance. And right. So, right. You know, how do you, unless you have a niche or a very boutique practice, or you're in a very, very expensive area, the odds are you're going to be dealing with insurance companies.
And I mean, all of this is true, and all of it is definitely a piece of the puzzle. But, you know, for me, recognizing that that's a reality, that also kind of helps you and anyone listening to this understand when I talk about building the prescription XRT platform that I'm building. The reason that I'm, one of the reasons that I'm building it the way I'm building it, is because it will be very inexpensive for therapists to use, and the clients aren't going to be paying for it because the therapist would pay for it because it's a tool in the toolbox. And so being able to provide that higher level of exposure, i.e. hopefully a quicker therapy so that they graduate sooner, is something that is beneficial to the therapist, to the patient, to everybody, because now you can, you know, if you're a therapist and you're taking insurance and you're spending hours fighting with the insurance company and all the things that we just talked about, you generally don't have time to go learn some new technology and pay for thousands of dollars of equipment to put into your office and then have to figure out, because I've learned doctors, therapists, lawyers, dentists generally are not very tech savvy in my experience.
Right.
So they don't have the time or the desire to start figuring out what button to click here, there, whatever. So that was very important to me when I built my program, which was, if it's not a single button to press, we're not building it.
Right.
So that is a key part of my design. And so by keeping the cost ultra low and making access broader and giving people tools that they're already, you know, familiar with, pretty much therapists know how to do Zoom or a similar type of call now. That's not that, you know, advanced. And so that when they're struggling with the cost issues, this doesn't become another barrier for them. So that was another important piece of this.
No, it's a very important piece. And I, you know, the interesting thing for me is that the one good thing that the pandemic has brought out is the fact that teletherapy became more viable. Mm-hmm. And the idea of doing remote therapy all of a sudden became acceptable. Because I remember, I don't know, 10 years ago, I got a board certification in telemental health. Mm-hmm. And all my friends looked at me and said, "What's wrong with you? What are you doing that for?" And I said, "Wait, you'll see. It's going to be worth it. You'll see." And then when the pandemic hit, all of a sudden these people coming back like, "How do you do this stuff? What do you do?" Because all of a sudden everyone had to do it that way. But I think it opened up the doors, and I think it's made the idea of teletherapy and distance treatment actually more acceptable. And it, you know, and even in terms of VR, you know, if you go back, and this is just one of my little obsessive things, when we first started doing VR, there might have been two major companies out there. I mean, Virtually Better was probably the major company. And I've been keeping track of VR companies in the behavioral health realm. I'm up to 114. And so all of that really happened in the last couple of years, that all of us and everyone, there's a place for this now. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, your concept of really kind of that individualization is very important. And I think that that's where it has to go. Because to me, the ability to like punch in everything I need, oh, you have this problem under these circumstances with this, you know, that's really where it has to be. And, you know, my dream has always been, you know, the Star Trek holodeck.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll probably never see, but
I don't know. You may very well see that the speed of technology right now with all that's happening. You may,
because when we get to that point, that's going to be it. I mean, to be able to be in the same room in the same place, and create a completely individualized environment, mm-hmm. with functioning, responsive AI avatars who could, you know, like for even like a social skill deficit problem, social anxiety, where you can now have these people interact and have some kind of realism to them. It's like, that'd be great. But
you know what? That's actually already in existence. I know it's being used in training of psychiatrists and medical doctors, mm-hmm. Where they can literally put on a pair of goggles, walk into a patient room,
right,
see the patient, which is a computerized, you know, avatar, and interact with them. And this is how they're teaching them bedside manner and things. So we're already there. Now, yeah,
there are companies that are working on it. There's a company in Norway called Simly. I don't know if you come across them, no. But they work for social anxiety. That's their focus. And I did kind of like look at their platform briefly. And the one thing I saw was that somebody was going to do a public speaking engagement, and they're walking on the wings, in the wings, just before they get to the stage. And there's a guy standing there. now all of a sudden they have this complete independent interaction with this guy who's going to say, well, you look a little nervous, you okay? And really, they're very responsive to whatever, you know, the person says. Yeah, yeah, it was very sophisticated. So, yeah, I understand that that's coming. But you know, I, in terms of general practice and stuff, you know, the real problem is that, as you and I know, we came from environments where none of this training existed. And clinicians, for the most part, are comfortable in what they're trained in. And so without enough training in programs in VR and augmented reality and extended reality interventions, it's not really going to get the exposure I think it needs. So we have to get training set up, and we have to get it in programs so that clinicians graduate with a skill set in this area.
I mean, absolutely. And you know, we're already, like I said, you know, we're starting to see the beginnings of that. So you've got people like Elizabeth McMahon, who's right. doing trainings with VR and anxiety, and she's got a book out and she's doing great work there.
Right.
The one of the challenges is, in order to train them, you got to have the tools available for them to use and play with. Mm-hmm. So as soon as my platform launches and we get through our beta testing, that's one of the things that I'm going to have to offer is training just in general of how to do this, not how to use the program. That's pretty simple, but how to use it with VR. And so I also have written a book about it that is being edited right now and formatted for publication. And so within the next 2 months, I expect that'll be out on the market on Amazon. And you're right, but we're at that beginning stage and somebody's got to do it. Now, you've got a great amount of experience and knowledge in the field. I would hope that you would, you know, do some of that as well, because you have so much to share and offer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's going to take people like us to make that part happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, the rule of thumb was that it takes 20 years for a new technology or therapeutic treatment to become, I guess, mass accepted among clinicians. But VR has been around for a lot longer than that. But my theory has always been that if the 20-year mark is there, I think we're at year six. Because I take from 2015, I think, was the start of a transition. And so I think that all right, maybe we're maybe up year eight, I guess. Right? But yeah, we got, you know, a few years to go, but I think the progression is going to really accelerate, and the evolution of this process and programming is really going to take off. Let's see what happens with the next round of head mounted displays.
Therein is the rub. And what I mean by that is, in my opinion, one of the main reasons that it has not taken off is because of the expense and the need for specialized technology. Those two things hold therapists back from getting involved with it, make it too expensive for clients to be involved with, too complicated for people to understand. At least that's what their perception is. And that's, I can tell you, when I started practicing, when I started my residency, I looked into VR and I checked out some of the products that were on the market at the time. And when I looked at them, my actual decision point was, okay, they've got a very small number of options available to me in terms of scenarios, number one. I got to buy this expensive equipment and have it in my office. The client's got to come and use it, number two. Mm-hmm. I have to pay, you know, an expensive annual subscription. It was like, okay, so I'm paying for a Rolls Royce and I'm getting a bicycle. And it didn't make any sense to me because I couldn't use it for what I needed it for. So why am I going to pay all this money and then I can't even use it? And then the pandemic hits and everything moves online. And now it's completely out the window because I can't do anything with it. I'm not going to buy, you know, $500 headsets and send them to my clients all over the, you know, country. I can't afford to do that.
You know, that is the model that they have to like set up in large institutions, you know, like a hospital. And that's the other reason why, just exactly for that reason, you know, like even though we could see the effectiveness for an institution like a hospital to set this up, they would need a department. They would have to buy all this equipment. It would have to be leased out on some level. They would have to somebody who would orchestrate this and manage it. And you're right. So they turn around and go, well, we're going to invest all this money and all this equipment and have to have a department. And we're not going to get a return on our investment on this thing.
Right.
So, you know, the other thing that's connected, I think, in a sense, is there's not really yet, as far as I could tell, a real compelling reason why even the general population, unfortunately, should pick up a VR headset. You know, it's like, I think on some level, you know, most technology starts from the top and then trickles down. Mm-hmm. I think in this situation, my experience is it's got to start from the bottom and go up. When VR or augmented reality becomes so accepted in the general population that it's just part of what we do, then using it clinically would make more sense, and it would be easier because everyone would have all the availability.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not there yet. And you know, the 2016 was the year of VR. No.
Right.
and I think that what's happened is that this has gone on. And Skip Rizzo used to say that there's like waves, you know, and it's like it's big and then it dies. It's big. And that's exactly what's happened. And I've been waiting for Apple to jump in because, you know, once Apple jumped in, you know, they pretty much sit back and wait for everyone to screw up. And then they figure out where to step in. But you can't step in when your first model is a $4,000 model.
Right.
And there's still no real reason I think anyone needs it. So it'll take a couple of generations, I think, for that to kind of come down to the general population. And I think when that happens, we're going to see a revolution.
I mean, I agree with you. I, you know, my vision is more that I think it's going to be, it's going to come in from the top and the bottom and eventually meet in the middle, because I know that hospitals and institutions and things are interested in looking at technology, but you're right. You can imagine, we got to have the tech guy because the person using it doesn't know how to set the goggles right. Again, all of these, because we're building the Rolls Royce. And when you build the Rolls Royce, you got all the technical things you got to fix. Like I own a Mercedes. It's 22 years old, but it's a Mercedes. And in a regular car, if you wanted to clean your windshield, there's a pump that pushes water through a tube and it sprays on the windshield. Oh no, not in Mercedes. It pushes the pump into a tube that has its own heater and extra pump and other types of things. And it's got like 10 steps before it sprays water on your windshield. I don't need that to do mm-hmm. VR therapy, but that's what we're creating. And it's cool. And it is great. I mean, when you use it, yeah, this is really great, but it's not realistic in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so I keep telling everybody, there's plenty of companies out there building Rolls Royce and they're making great Rolls Royces. My interest is in building the equivalent of a used Chevy. I want to get in the car. I want to go from point A to point B reliably and safely, but I don't need to do it with gold plated everything around me. And so that's what makes it accessible to the average consumer, the average therapist. And because there's no special stuff to learn, you know, again, if you can use Zoom, you can use, you know, my platform. So I think that's one of the things, those are some of the reasons why I created what I'm creating. I'm not, you know, I don't consider myself competing with anybody. you know, there's room for lots of companies in the market. There's going to be lots of different ideas. And yeah, I have nothing bad to say about any other companies out there. I just have a different set of needs. And so I'm creating something that meets my needs. But I think that will allow for that top and bottom to kind of come together.
Yeah. Listen, we're out of time. It's great talking to you. I know we were meandered a little bit, but we covered a lot of territory. So Andrew, how does anyone find you? How do they get a hold of you?
Okay, great question. So if someone's interested in the technology, they can go to www.rxxrt, stands for prescriptionxrt.com. And right now, they're just going to see a landing page where they can sign up to be notified when we have the product out. I just spoke to my programmers just prior to our call, actually. And we are probably, you know, I always say about 2 weeks away, and then there's always that next issue that comes up. But we're very, very close because we were actually using it online with each other. So it's coming out for beta testing soon. So if you're a therapist and you want to be part of the beta test, sign up on that mailing list and we'll notify you. Mm-hmm. And then assuming everything goes well, then we'll put it out. I've got a PhD who wants to do some research with it. So we've got a lot of stuff happening. So that's how they get me, www.rxxrt.com. And I'm happy to answer any questions anyone has.
And if they want to get a hold of you for treatment purposes?
For treatment, easy. They can go to stopmyocd.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a contact form there and all sorts of information about us, phone numbers, everything are there. So, you know, what I think would be really interesting is once I have the technology up and running, I'd love to maybe revisit this with you and show an example of what it does and how it works, because I think that speaks for itself.
Okay, no problem. Great. Looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on. And, you know, you are, I mean, I'm assuming people know this about you, but you are one of the pioneers out there with VR and therapy. And you have so much knowledge and breadth of understanding about this that it's really, it's a pleasure to be able to speak with you, because I think we both understand the same topics.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so Andrew, till next time.